This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore.
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
What's going on, everybody, guys and girls? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5. Also the host of the Football Function Podcast. Go check us out if you are a football fan, if you enjoy the NFL. I feel like you'll really like our podcast. It's a pretty fun show. We're getting into football season now. It's right around the corner, 5 days away from an actual game. The Hall of Fame game is coming up, and I know that I'm excited for that. So if you are a football fan, definitely hope that you will go check us out over there at Football Function. But with all that being said, we're here to talk about wrestling, and SmackDown in particular, the SmackDown that aired on July 30th, 2021 from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I do feel like this was another good episode of SmackDown, maybe not as good as the week before and the week before that, but when the bar set so high, you kind of have high expectations going into it, obviously. I don't feel like this was a bad show at all. It just maybe took a couple steps back. And that's not a bad thing. I still feel like I said, it was a good show. I feel like it delivered. There were four matches. We had a contract signing, a couple shocking moments, I guess you can say, with the return of Sasha Banks and then her shocking us again a little bit later in the night. But it was just a good show, in my opinion. I thought that it started pretty good with John Cena. I mean, that's kind of how they've been starting the shows lately on Raw and SmackDown. I mean, it makes sense. You want to get the guy out there who's going to get the crowd invested early and kind of get the energetic juices flowing. So I thought that was a good call to have John Cena start the show. And I hope that they continue to do that. As long as it doesn't get old, you know, as long as he's going out there and he's furthering storylines like he did today and they're entertaining like this one was, then I don't think the crowds are going to have a problem with it. Honestly, I think that from city to city, he can go out there and just deliver something different, but continue the storyline and continue the development with Roman Reigns. And that was pretty entertaining what we got here at the first segment, and I'm going to get right into it. It was John Cena opening the show, and he starts by talking about Roman Reigns and how last week he rejected John Cena's challenge, which was for the Universal Championship at SummerSlam, but he accepted Finn Balor's, and we weren't sure if it was specifically for the Universal Championship. We find out tonight, though, that it was, because we get the contract signing. Or at least we were supposed to get that specific contract signing. And we'll get to that whenever we do. But John Cena is basically addressing all of that whole situation with Finn Balor and Roman Reigns. Eventually, Baron Corbin comes out. And Corbin is dressed like he has been recently, like an absolute stooge. And he is making his way to the ring. John Cena doesn't recognize him at first. Or at least that's what he said. And he finally does. And Corbin's just telling him, hey, look, man, I am absolutely down bad. He's filling him in, catching him up, about everything that's been going on in his life the past few weeks and why he looks like an absolute wreck. And then he references getting hit in the groin region, the lower area of his, and he gets hit there with a shirt, but apparently it was so bad that he can't, quote unquote, perform. And John Cena picks up what he's putting down and he understands what he's trying to say. And then basically, you know, just has a little funny moment there with the crowd, but it's just basically trying to add on to the whole sob story about why Baron Corbin is supposed to make you feel bad for him. And John Cena reaches in his pocket and he pulls out a $100 bill. It's all he had on him, supposedly, and he tries to give it to Baron Corbin, and Baron Corbin isn't even appreciative of that. He's basically saying, like, come on, man, this is it. You're a movie star now. You're Hollywood. Why can't you do a little bit more, you know, put me in one of your movies. I'll be your stunt double. And John Cena just basically laughs about that. But he kind of asked the crowd, hey, should we help this guy out really quick? And everybody, there were some, according to Pat McAfee, there were some very clear no's in the crowd. Like, there were some people who don't want to see Baron Corbin be helped. There were some that were cheering, yeah, you know, they do want to see Baron Corbin get the help that he needs. But John Cena, after Baron Corbin starts to take some more shots, like basically calls him a Hollywood sellout and says that he's a tightwad, this and that, John Cena says, you know what? You need an attitude adjustment. And he gives him just that in the middle of the ring. And then takes off. And that's pretty much where that segment ends, is John Cena getting the better of Baron Corbin, him laying there. But one thing I did think was funny here is John Cena reached down and picked up that $100 bill after he gave the attitude adjustment to Baron Corbin. So that's twice now that Baron Corbin has received money, gotten laid out, and then had that money stolen from him. So it's just funny. It's one of those little things that they didn't point it out, and I didn't even notice the first time I watched it. I had to go back and look, and then I saw John Cena pick up that $100 bill, so I thought that was pretty funny. Up next, we get our first match of the night. It's a one-on-one match between Rey Mysterio and Jimmy Uso. Before the match, however, we get to see a little backstage interaction with Rey and Dominic. And Dominic is telling Rey Mysterio that he's going to be ringside. He's going to make sure to watch Jay and make sure that, you know, there's no outside interference. And Rey says, "Thank you, son. I'm glad you're going to do that. I want you to watch Jay. But also, you know, keep an eye on me in the ring, because you've made some rookie mistakes lately." And I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, it caught me off guard, but I thought it was pretty cool that Rey Mysterio kind of pointed that out, because it's not all sunshine and rainbows, you know? Like, hey, yeah, I mean, you're doing great, but at the same time, there's still a long way that you need to go. So let's not forget about that. You know, I'm impressed with what you're doing. You're taking strides, but Rey Mysterio probably knows better than anybody. He says, yeah, just keep an eye on me, because your old man still has some tricks up his sleeve. And he does just that, I will say. That segment right there kind of let me know, is Rey Mysterio going to take it to another level tonight? And he does. He actually has a hell of a match. And he does kind of show you that there are some, there is some gas still left in the tank of Rey Mysterio. And I've already said that, how just consistent he is, how he's still performing at this level, given that he's been doing it since the 90s. Like, that's pretty crazy to think about at a professional level. WCW, WWE, Rey Mysterio has been around for a very long time. And to still have that style that he does is just so crazy to me. And he does get the win here over Jimmy Uso with a little bit of assistance from Dominic. He kind of puts his feet on his back to secure the pinfall. And the Mysterios get a win. And they made it very clear in that pre-match segment, that interaction there that they had backstage, that they are still going after those tag team championship. So you can definitely expect to see the Mysterios have a rematch, probably on the SummerSlam pre-show or on a SmackDown leading up to it. I wouldn't be upset if they actually put that match on the card. I know that the SummerSlam card is starting to look a little bit packed if we're going to include all of these grudge matches that aren't for championships. I mean, Sheamus will likely be defending that United States Championship at SummerSlam. I can't see them leaving that championship off of the SummerSlam card. However, Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal, and I know this isn't a Raw review, but that's another match that looks like it's building towards SummerSlam. And didn't we say that Karrion Kross might get some revenge on Jeff Hardy come SummerSlam or something along those lines? So, I mean, if SummerSlam is looking how it's looking and it's going to be a pretty jam-packed show, I'm curious if they're actually going to put those SmackDown Tag Team Championships on the line on the card. I mean, I could see it making the pre-show, like I said, but if there's going to be a lot of pure grudge matches and that's what the creative team is focused on, then I could see them easily putting the titles to the back burner. They've done that before several times. Even on the last pay-per-view, they were on the pre-show and they had arguably match of the night. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see, and maybe they'll get those opportunities before SummerSlam. Maybe they can get it on SmackDown or something like that. But continuing on here in the show, we get a interview with Caleb Braxton and Bianca Belair. And this one's in the ring. And Bianca is talking about how this year, 2021, has been obviously one that she'll probably remember for the rest of her life. Winning the Royal Rumble in January, the start there. Main eventing WrestleMania, that's something that, I mean, it wasn't like Becky Lynch where it was a one-night event and she was the true main event, but if I'm not mistaken, wasn't she the main event of night one, that Saturday, her and Sasha? I thought that's what was the case there, but not 100% sure. That was back in April, and a lot of stuff's happened since then, so I could definitely see myself not remembering correctly, but she lists that as one of her accomplishments, and rightfully so. She also talks about winning an ESPY, performing in front of Rolling Loud, you know, that crowd there. I mean, it's been a pretty good year for Bianca Belair. They even mentioned how she's been champion now for 111 days when I'm recording this. And that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's a long time in WWE whenever you are as young as Bianca Belair to have the championship that long. And it doesn't look like she's going to lose it really anytime soon. And that might be contradicting myself given what happens a little bit later in the show. But we'll get there whenever we do. Right now, actually, Carmella comes out and she wants a rematch. She challenges Bianca and tells her to defend that championship one more time against her. I don't think anybody really wants to see that anymore. And Zelina Vega comes out and basically says what we're all thinking. No, Carmella, it's my opportunity. She needs to challenge a rising star, quote unquote. And nobody really wants to see you lose for a third time. It's basically exactly what she said. Well, they go to the ring and Zelina Vega challenges Bianca Belair to a match. And Bianca actually accepts. I mean, she does. It's not like a formal thing where they said, yes, it's going to be for a women's championship match. But she says, all right, you're on, Zelina, or something along those lines. And right then is where Carmella attacks her from behind. And then Zelina and Carmella do a little bit of a two-on-one against Bianca until we get the return of none other than Sasha Banks, who sprints to the ring to come to the aid of Bianca Belair, which is, it wasn't too surprising. I mean, that's obviously why she returned in that segment, was to even the odds a little bit. But as soon as the odds were even, I guess you can say, I thought that the turn was going to happen then. I thought, all right, here we go. Sasha Banks is about to do the bank statement to Bianca, and we're going to get more Bianca versus Sasha. We don't get that. It's actually a hug. They dance for a little bit. It's definitely a warm embrace. And that kind of surprised me. So that was, I guess, the first shock. Well, I guess you could say second, because the first shock was Sasha Banks returning in the first place. And then the second was her not attacking Bianca Belair and actually helping her. So that definitely caught me off guard. And we later get the announcement from Sonya Deville that we're going to get a tag team match as the main event. Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks versus Zelina Vega and Carmella. And remember, back whenever they were just now starting the whole build-up to Bianca Belair and Sasha, they had a tag team match, Sasha and Bianca did. And I remember commenting how impressive they were as a team and how believable they were and how I would actually buy into them as a women's tag team. So whenever this happened, I didn't think that it was going to last. That's not what I'm trying to say, but I guess it just kind of reminded me of that that match that they had back in, I don't even know when that was, probably early 2021, if I'm not mistaken. But either way, I just think that these two women are an unstoppable tag team. And I bet that, of course, you can lose by, like, hook or crook, or, you know, you can get cheated out by some shape or form. But just in a true tag team clean match, I don't think that Bianca and Sasha would lose very many matches. I mean, you can even give Charlotte a tag team partner and, you know, we'll see how she fares against them. But just as far as two women who are blue chip, in my opinion, and just at the top of their game right now, I think that they would be a tough team to beat. And that's just, you know, my personal opinion. And you guys can definitely shoot me a couple women's names who you think might give them a good challenge. In the WWE, and it could be cross-branded if you want. You know, it could be somebody from Raw or NXT, vice versa. I mean, obviously, like, Raquel Gonzalez and Charlotte would definitely probably give them a run for their money. So there's definitely teams out there. But I'm just very high on them as a tag team. Later on in the night, we find out that they're not going to be a tag team, though, and we'll definitely get there whenever we do. Continuing on here in the show, let's see. We get a 24/7 championship match, like an actual match. And I thought this was kind of weird, just being honest. I was surprised that they gave this match an actual build-up. And it wasn't like they, you know, talked about it prior to this show, but before the commercial break, they said we're going to have a 24/7 match, Reginald versus a mystery guy. And that's kind of what I was like, well, this is weird. I mean, normally, what's stopping anybody from running out to the ring and that single file line to interrupt this match and basically make it end in a DQ or just hop in the ring and pin them? Because if it's a 24/7 rules, you can pin them anytime, any place. So I'm not sure how that actually was factoring in here. I know that in other instances they have announced that the 24/7 rules were turned off. So maybe if it's an official 24/7 championship match, the rules are automatically turned off. I assume so. It just makes sense to do it that way. But before this match, Reginald is talking to Caleb Braxton, and he makes it clear that he actually prefers to be called Reggie. And the announcer calls him that. The commentators call him that. So I think going forward, you're probably going to see the name Reginald scrapped, and he's eventually going to be known as strictly Reggie. But in this match, the mystery guy ends up being Chad Gable, At first, we thought it might have been Otis. They come out together, and the camera's focused on Otis. He has that look on his face, and he goes to the ring and tells Reggie that it's not actually going to be him, that's going to be Chad Gable. And then he shoves him down just to give Gable a little bit of an advantage, but Reggie eventually gets the upper hand, and he looks like he's in prime position to win this match, but Otis interferes and causes a disqualification, and then Reggie leaves with his 24/7 championship. So, I mean, that's pretty much all that we get there. He does, before that match, whenever he says that he prefers to be called Reggie, he actually talks about how whenever he first got in the WWE, he was just thankful. You know, he was happy to represent Sasha or Carmella or Nia Jax. But now that he's 24/7 champion, he feels like he's happier, I guess. I mean, he didn't really say that, but you could tell that maybe he's going to be sticking around. I mean, he's talented. He might not be able to wrestle a five-star match, but I mean, whenever you're talking about the athletic aspect and all that stuff, I mean, it's hard to find somebody right now who's better than him, and that's just being honest. He is out there flipping around and flying, and you just rarely ever see him take a bump like that is detrimental to his health because he's always, you know, flipping out of it, and it's just cool to see because I can respect it from an athletic standpoint. Like, man, that's pretty crazy. You can tell he is just a freak of nature when it comes to that type of stuff. Like, I actually want to see how many back handsprings he can do in a row because he just starts flipping, and I've seen him do, like, 10 probably. But I actually want to see it, like, get him on a football field and see how far he can go. But that's completely off topic. Reggie keeps his 24/7 championship, and we will see how long. And speaking of how long, I wonder how long they're actually going to keep this 24/7 championship around. Like, I wonder. I do think it's going to eventually go away. I think that they're going to run out of stuff to do with it. But at the same time, they might not because this is kind of like an automatic spot for lower card guys who you have nothing to do with, but you have to keep employed to just have a decent sized roster. I mean, you guys know the type of people who chase this 24/7 championship every week, the likes of Akira Tozawa, Drew Gulak, and I like Drew Gulak, but it's no secret that WWE isn't high on him, obviously, or he wouldn't be chasing the 24/7 championship every week. Lucha House Party, those people like that who on a weekly basis you see in this segment. And I feel like without the 24/7 championship, there would be absolutely nothing for them to do. So it doesn't really surprise me that they have continued to keep this championship. But I do wonder how long, because it's not the most entertaining thing. And I feel like I'm not going out on a limb by saying that. It's one of the low spots, and it's normally not on SmackDown. They usually keep it on Raw for the most part. So seeing it on SmackDown and seeing Reggie was a little bit weird, but hey, whatever. If he's on SmackDown more and that 24/7 championship is on SmackDown more, then I will continue to give my honest opinion about how I feel, and I guess I'll have a closer look and see if they eventually get rid of it as a whole. I mean, I wouldn't complain, honestly. If they decided to get rid of that championship, I would not blink an eye, and I would wave it goodbye very happily. But continuing on here in the show, we finally get that Universal Championship contract signing. Finn Balor goes to the ring first. Roman Reigns comes out, sits where he normally sits, and he actually starts to praise Finn Balor. He does. He compliments him, and he says that he feels like he's hungry. He's nothing like John Cena. He actually wants the championship, and he does. He thinks that because of that, he digs him. He said, "I dig you for that," and I do feel like that's real. Even back when I referenced their match back on Raw, Finn Balor's first night, Roman Reigns paid his respect to him that night as well and made it very obvious that he was high on Finn Balor. And you could tell that he still is because Roman doesn't just go around handing out compliments. Now, he still said that he was going to kick his ass. He still said that he's going to pin him and send him back to NXT. But he didn't shy away from praising Finn Balor. And I want to definitely get that across because I feel like that's important. Roman Reigns doesn't do that every day. So let's just tell you how he feels about Finn Balor. And I think Finn Balor is a worthy opponent. He's not going to be the next challenger, because as he was about to sign the contract, he's attacked from behind by Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin attempts to sign it, but right before he does, John Cena comes out. He runs to the ring, attacks Corbin, throws him out of the ring, pulls a Sharpie out of his pocket, and he signs the contract. And Paul Heyman tries to dispute it with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville. He goes backstage and says, "Come on, this isn't right. Look at the contract. It says Finn Balor is supposed to be in this match." Adam Pearce says, "Look, the only thing I see here is Roman Reigns' signature and John Cena's signature. So I'm going to say right here to your face, that's good enough for me." Sonya Deville doubles down and says, "At SummerSlam, we're going to get John Cena versus Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. And I'm excited as hell for that. I really am. That's going to be a hell of a main event for SmackDown. I cannot wait for that match. I'm looking forward to the build-up going into it. Obviously, I want to see them, you know, Take the chains off. I want to see Roman Reigns in the ring face to face with John Cena with a live mic, both of them going back and forth. I feel like that is where we will really know how Roman Reigns, or how far he's come in this development, in this heel role. We'll see if he is really taking that next step in all aspects, because we all know that he's better on the mic. How much is that? Is Paul Heyman in his ear helping him on a weekly basis with his promos? I mean, he's delivering. It feels real. I can tell you right now, I'm loving what I'm seeing from Roman Reigns on the mic. But man, like I've said before, and I'm not trying to beat it into the ground, but when you're going against John Cena, it's a completely different animal. And I do think that Roman Reigns might be ready for the challenge. So I'm looking forward to actually getting a chance to see that, hopefully. I don't want to see them go back and forth, you know, someone say it while the other one's backstage, and then the other person responds while he's backstage, and we just get a quick face-to-face. Now that the contract's signed, we still have a few weeks leading up to SummerSlam, sorry. We got a few SmackDowns left before SummerSlam, and John Cena is going to be going on both shows, so it's going to be kind of interesting, but I guess we'll see what he does on Raw, if he's just going to continue to take shots at Roman Reigns from the other brand, and maybe Roman Reigns will show up and attack him on Raw. I don't know. I don't know if I've seen Roman Reigns on Raw since he's been champion and since he's come back. I could be wrong. Somebody can definitely let me know if I am wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's been solely on SmackDown. But anyways, there you go. John Cena versus Roman Reigns. It's officially official. We're going to have that match at SummerSlam, and we'll see if the rest of the card will kind of step their game up, knowing that there's a match of that caliber. I'm hoping that the booking and creative team will kind of give us some other things, because they've already been saying that, I mean, they're looking at this like WrestleMania. I mean, it's in a stadium worthy of a WrestleMania. So, I don't know. Let's see what they have up their sleeve, other than Goldberg. I mean, it's going to be fun covering Raw with Goldberg here. I'm definitely looking forward to that. But let's see. Up next, we get a six-man tag match. Shinsuke Nakamura, Big E, and Cesaro versus the Dirty Dogs and Apollo Crews. And this match was, I mean, it was cool, I guess. Rick Boogs kind of got involved, and I will say one thing I wrote down here, Cesaro had the best European uppercut I've probably ever seen. And not the most, you know, quote-unquote beautiful or in a big moment, but he did it to Commander Aziz, and it knocked him back like four or five steps. Like, you could tell it really showed how powerful Cesaro is in that moment. It was outside of the ring by the commentary table as soon as Commander Aziz threw Rick Boogs into the announce table. Cesaro just came out of nowhere and just gave him one of those uppercuts, and man, it was a beautiful thing to see. So probably one of my favorites that I've seen from Cesaro. But let's see here. How does this match even end? Oh yeah, Shinsuke Nakamura pins Apollo Crews, and the babyface teams win, or the babyface team wins. So there you have it there. Six-man tag match. Basically as plain as it gets, a little bit of outside interference. I'm not really sure why or who Shinsuke Nakamura is feuding with in all of this. I know that Cesaro has kind of had a little thing going with Apollo. We referenced that last week. They didn't really specifically address that. They kind of just featured all these guys who they want. The Dirty Dogs being in this was kind of random. So you could tell they just wanted to have a heel team versus a babyface team and go from there, I guess. I don't know if the Dirty Dogs are going to continue being a tag team. I guess you could just assume so. There's no reason to split them up. It's not like either one of them are going to be pushed anytime soon as a single star, so the tag team division is extremely thin. Do not split up any teams, and maybe even start featuring them a little bit. I don't know. But let's see here. Up next, we were supposed to get Edge. Edge was on his way out to the ring. He got a nice pop from the crowd. He was doing his entrance. And on the TV version, I'm not sure how this was on Hulu, if you actually got to see the attack. But during the commercial break, because whenever it comes back from commercial break, while Edge is doing his entrance, Seth Rollins is standing in the ring. And then the announce team and everybody says, well, this is what happened during commercial break. And it shows that Seth Rollins came out and attacked Edge as he was making his way to the ring and beat the hell out of him. And he even hit him in the head with a camera. And that was badass. I mean, Matt said he wants more chair headshots. I know this wasn't a chair headshot, but you could tell definitely Edge sold it well. Normally they don't do that type of stuff. Rey Mysterio is really the only guy who I can think of in recent memory who still uses weapons and he hits people in the head with them, like he did Brock Lesnar with that metal pipe. I seen him do it with a championship as well. Seth Rollins took a little bit of a page from that playbook, and he used a camera and took it right to the head of Edge. I love seeing that. I really did. And I'm kind of in the same boat as some other people when they say that they miss the headshots. I do too. I mean, it's a we're not talking about, you know, beating the absolute hell out of people, but a nice chair shot here and there when it's warranted, I feel like would be beneficial. I don't know. I mean, I'm not rooting for anybody to get injured or anything like that, but like Matt said, there's ways you can make a chair that wouldn't really hurt. I mean, if you smack somebody with a frying pan in the head, it's going to make that noise, but it's not going to hurt them, you know? I mean, unless you absolutely, you know, swing for the fences. But if you're just, you know, hitting them, you know how hard you can hit somebody without hurting them. So, I don't know. I could be maybe reaching a little bit, but I don't know. I'm with Matt and everybody else who feels like chair shots to the head are definitely missed in wrestling, and I feel like they add so much. So, maybe we can get a little bit more of this if they can do it in a safe way, because it was just so nice to see Seth Rollins Edge in the head with the camera. I will say that. But continuing on here, the main event, Sasha Banks versus Carmella and Zelina Vega. And like I alluded to earlier in the show, I love this tag team. I feel like they are a dominant team together. And it's no question that they won this match. The only question was how long was it going to be and who was going to actually finish the match off. It ended up being Sasha Banks making Carmella tap out to the bank statement. But there were several other instances where you could just tell that this team was way more dominant. Sasha Banks, in my opinion, is up there with Charlotte as far as just true talented competitors in their opinion. We're not going to get into that whole debate about who's better and this and that. We could talk about that whenever they're done. I feel like right now Sasha Banks is extremely motivated and she's extremely talented. Obviously, you add those two together and you're going to get a nice little run here because she is after this SmackDown Women's Championship. We find that out right after the match. They have a little bit of a warm embrace again. They're kind of dancing around. It lasted a little bit longer than I thought, but I was watching and I was waiting, and eventually we finally got it. The backstabber into the bank statement. And Sasha Banks holds it there for a very long time on Bianca Belair. And she says, you think I for the entire time, she's saying, you think I forgot? You think I forgot? And then she stops for a little bit, holds up the championship. She gets right back into it, gets her in the bank statement. And it was a beautiful thing to see. I love heel Sasha Banks because she's so vicious. She's one of those women, and I've said it for a long time. She has the best slap in WWE. When she cocks back and she lets that thing go, she didn't slap Bianca tonight, but she has slapped her before. She slapped Reginald. She slaps several people, and she, for some reason, it's just smooth. And it looks like it'll absolutely take your head off. But, I mean, I feel like this was exciting, seeing Sasha Banks come back in this capacity. Because at first, I mean, she made you wait for it. Yeah, she came back, and she kind of confused you. Wait, what? Why is she helping Bianca Belair? And then you thought, well, I don't know, maybe they'll do this. And, of course, the other foot came down, and we saw the true side of Sasha Banks and why she really came back. And it's not to help Bianca Belair. It is to take her championship and maybe spearhead SmackDown into the, I don't know what era we're going to call it, but back into the fan era and be the women's champion because of how popular she is. I know she's popular on this show. We have like three or four people who call in every week and they love their Sasha Banks. On the internet, people love Sasha. So I feel like she's one of the few women who, it doesn't matter what you're doing with her, you're going to make a large percentage of the fan base happy. But if you can do the right thing with Sasha Banks, which I feel like is have her be the SmackDown Women's Champion, then I think that it'll excite even the more knowledgeable and objective fans who don't have a horse in the race, who really, you know, because trust me, I know, if you're a Sasha Banks fan, whether she's a heel, whether she's a babyface, you're going to support her and you're going to cheer for her. But there's other fans that aren't like that. It has to make sense. So if you're making it make sense, then I feel like you're going to please another portion of the WWE universe, quote unquote, as well as the huge chunk of the WWE universe who are going to follow Sasha no matter what. So I think having her in the main event picture on SmackDown is only going to add to what SmackDown is doing and continuing to make it one of the best shows, if not the best, and in my opinion, the best weekly show on a consistent basis, I guess you can say. There are some other, I mean, I like what NXT is doing. I've already said that before. Monday Night Raw, we'll see. If they went down to 2 hours, I know they never will, but if they did, man, I feel like it would be a little bit more of an even playing field there. But for now, it's not. And SmackDown is definitely taking the cake. And I'm enjoying it. I really am. I'm not going to lie. I mean, just covering SmackDown. I know, obviously, I have nothing to do with it, but it's just nice knowing that, like, the show that I cover is getting so much praise just from, like everybody knows that SmackDown's, you know, a good show. And just being a part of it, I feel like, you know, just being the official SmackDown host here on the show, it's nice. And eventually, I feel like the tides will turn. It's not going to last forever. SmackDown's not going to always be the better show. I feel like eventually Raw will have its day and Raw will kind of pick up and get going, because I was a huge Raw fan growing up. When I was a kid, I literally did not watch SmackDown. It wasn't because I didn't want to. I just didn't have the channel, the cable program or whatever, the cable provider that I had as a kid in the early 2000s just did not have the CW or whatever channel SmackDown came on at the time, because I know it kind of bounced around a little bit. And it bounced around on days too, and I feel like that's kind of always hurt SmackDown. But Friday's a good home for it. You got a show on Monday, you got a show on Friday, and I like that. But that is the SmackDown review. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It's a little bit later than what I normally do. My work schedule's kind of throwing us off a little bit here, but we're still getting the SmackDown review done, and I'm looking forward to covering Raw too whenever that does happen. I'm looking forward to hearing from Matt. I hope everything's going smooth there with him and his family, as well as you guys and your family. I hope you guys are all enjoying the end of summer, the end of July. This is actually the last day of July exactly. We are heading into August tomorrow. Today's July 31st as I'm recording this. And you guys probably hear me mention my roommate a lot on this show. He actually had his firstborn nephew today. His sister, Tori Grant, delivered her very first child at 1:07 a.m. So his nephew, who is named AJ, he is only, what, like 11 hours old? Like, he's young as I'm recording this. And that's actually where my roommate is right now. So shout out to Caleb Grant. Shout out to Tori. Definitely happy for you guys. And I know that AJ is going to be in good hands growing up, and I'm looking forward to meeting that little guy. But I do want to thank you guys all for listening to this podcast. I definitely appreciate it. It means a lot, and I hope that you will continue to do so going forward. And I hope that you guys all have a fantastic rest of your weekend. Do whatever makes you happy. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.